And now, as the South Dakota Hall of Fame prepares to welcome the class of 2016, Dakota Midday continues to welcome the new inductees. Today, we'd like to introduce you to Elizabeth or Betty Meyer. If you or someone you know has sought mammography services in the state, especially in the state's rural regions, there's a good chance Betty helped bring those services to you. She worked with the first breast cancer screening program in South Dakota and launched the first mobile mammography services available to rural hospitals and clinics in a three-state area. She joins us today from Sioux Falls. Betty, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
This is a really interesting conversation for me because it starts in earnest in 1983, which I sort of think is maybe having some of the services that we have today, but it didn't. Take me back in time a little bit to the early 80s and what existed in this state and what needed to be done.
Well, and at about that time, we were able to develop screening mammography recommendations that were put out by the American Cancer Society. And what that change was that women who did not have any symptoms of breast cancer would begin to have routine screening annually, age 35 and older, and, you know, that age guideline has moved all over the place and changed. But it became possible when they developed new mammography equipment. Previous to that, the mammography equipment was just a simple X-ray machine, and it used high doses of radiation, and the quality of the images was very, very poor. It was fuzzy, and you really couldn't tell. And by the time someone had a symptom and you had a mammogram with a regular X-ray machine, it was so far advanced that that really didn't prove of any benefit. So the timeliness of that all happening was very important to women and physicians to kind of learn about and, you know, start making that recommendation. And then also, the medical community decided that this was such an important test that women should be able to have a screening mammogram and not need to use a doctor's order, just give a doctor's name. And that was unheard of as well. So there were many things that were happening at that same time, and it just kept improving. And as the statistics showed, that earlier detection meant that the women were going to live longer with less surgeries and, you know, new and improved mammography equipment just kept getting better and better. It all kind of happened at once.
What kind of conversations do you remember having with your colleagues at that time as sort of those early advancements were coming in and you started seeing those opportunities ahead? What do you remember talking about with those colleagues?
Well, I remember speaking with different doctors' groups around the state because I was invited to speak to the doctors' groups as they met so that we could kind of relay this information. There was some hesitation, and I understood that completely because when I first heard it, I thought, why in the world would a woman want to go have radiation to their body and, you know, if it wasn't going to be effective? But then the more I learned, you know, the more convinced I was. And then obviously we were having some 35-year-olds come in for mammograms, and we were finding very early cancers on them. And, of course, then that just propelled me into, you know, a passionate desire to let women know that this could make a difference in their life. And as these women also became passionate about getting screening mammograms because they saw the benefits, then they wanted to make a difference in women's lives. So we had kind of a small army of women that, you know, really it supported one another. And so we started support groups. We, you know, just did everything we could to get that message out. And that's what we worked on for the first few years and continued that process to get that message out.
Do you recall feeling a sense of urgency at that time that there was a lot at stake?
You know, I did, because I had a very young friend who, while she was pregnant and age 27, discovered a lump in her breast. And by the time, you know, the doctors believed that, you know, it should be biopsied, you know, she had about a stage 3 breast cancer and a baby.
Hmm.
And, you know, and I felt that, you know, not so much in her case, but the more, you know, information that we had and the more research we had that could make a difference in these young women and, you know, and the older women, you know, I felt that there was a real need to get that message out, and I wasn't the only one. There were many, many, many people that shared that desire to get the message out. We had the American Cancer Society. Soon we had the Susan G. Komen. And, I mean, they're still getting that message out.
Talk to me about that army of women that you sort of gathered, and they made an interesting trip to Pierre to sort of spread that message, too. Tell me that story.
Well, I had read that South Dakota was one of the last states to have mandated mammography insurance coverage, and in visiting with these women, that was a barrier for them. And so just on my whim, I rented a Greyhound bus, for Jackrabbit bus, and called the women who were newly diagnosed by mammograms and asked if they would like to make a trip to Pierre. We had some legislators that were writing a bill and that were very interested in getting this through so that, you know, our women could have that opportunity for early diagnosis. And I had no problem filling that bus. Unfortunately, it took 3 years of us doing that, but we learned some methods that were a little unconventional, such as when the women came for their mammograms and I saw their last names and noted that they had a husband or son in the legislature, I kept my voting records close at hand and then visited with them a little bit about it. And they sometimes were quite shocked because they had been told that their, you know, constituent, their husband or son had voted for it, and I had the proof that they hadn't. And so I let them work on their husbands and sons. And then when we became aware that the state medical association opposed the bill, no one could understand that. So then we sent a television station out to interview the lobbyist at the medical association and caught him kind of off guard. And he was a little embarrassed, but the women, the wives of the women physicians that were members of their medical auxiliary threatened to leave the auxiliary if they didn't support that bill. Uh-huh. And after that happened, the bill passed real easy.
That is a civics lesson right there.
Yes, it is. It's grassroots from the dynamite beginning.
you had to have had just a tiny bit of fun once or twice with that, although it's not a light topic, but you must have had some passion that sort of fueled you to get out of bed and do some of that work.
Well, you do. I mean, you know, you just see the benefits almost daily. Uh-huh. And, you know, people were so grateful, and women were calling and saying, don't give up, you know, and we've got to get this through, and, you know, I'll do whatever I can do, you know. So you can't hardly say, well, I'm kind of tired of it. You know, you just plug ahead, and there were so many lessons to learn. I didn't know a thing about politics or how they worked or anything, but you quickly learn that, you know, we have a lot of good, smart people in Pierre, and they just needed to know the entire story of the benefits.
You have retired. You retired in 2010, I believe. When you look back at sort of the full picture of, you know, from, say, those early 1980s to, you know, where we are at now, what are some of the things that sort of surprise you about that journey, both for you professionally and for the organizations that you worked at?
Well, it still takes my breath away when I think about the support that I was given by the administration to do things a little different and, you know, patient-focused. And, you know, that was amazing to me because I didn't see myself as any kind of a leader or any, you know, I basically am an introvert but a passionate one. You know, so I look back at that and I think, you know, what a glorious opportunity. I felt so blessed. But then I look at all the advancements that have even happened, you know, with the genetics of breast cancer, looking at the tumors and what medications will work best for you, what chemotherapy agents will work best for you. That was just coming into light, you know, when I was leaving. And it was just an amazing time. Plus the quality of the mammograms with the digital mammography. Holy cow. It was like looking at inside the breast compared to what, you know, we had previously.
And now 3D digital as well has come, I think, to the region. Also, yeah, just in the last year, it had changed. You know, for me, between two appointments, it was updated already. We just have about a minute left, and I'm wondering if there was a time as a leader that you had to give yourself permission to step into that role of leadership, or as an introvert, did you have to give yourself permission, or did that come from someone else who said, go ahead, you can do it?
You know, I just had two outstanding vice presidents who just inspired me all the time. And it didn't matter where I went. The other thing was the staff that I worked with, they were so encouraging, and I tried to be the best kind of boss that I could be for them. So I tried to empower them, you know, to make a difference every single time, you know, there was a patient that they were working with, because I saw that as giving that person the full spectrum of care and concern, and that she was the only one that they were with at that particular time. And it was just a glorious experience, all of it. I just really felt blessed.
Betty Meyer is a 2016 inductee into the South Dakota Hall of Fame. The 39th annual honor ceremony is September 9th and 10th in Chamberlain. For tickets, you can visit sdexcellence.org. Betty, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much.
And congratulations.
Thank you, Lori.